And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon on this wonderful Thursday, tailing in on the last few days of March, and it's feeling nice out there, at least in the FM area where temperatures are in the 40s right now. We'll make it up into the mid-50s today. A little cooler in the Northern Valley, though, where a little more cloud cover has kept temperatures there into the 30s. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director, Bridget Riedel. And Bridget, you're not on the road. I thought you were on the road today, but you are at your home office.
Nope, today I am not. The rest of the week, you know, all one day of it, yes, I will be. So many things to do. In fact, before we even get to the weather, I just want to make a great big thank you to all those who came out last night to support Common Ground North Dakota when they hosted the movie From the Heartland, and that was at the Fargo Theater. Afterwards, I hosted a Q&A panel with a group of farmers. A lot of great audience interaction. Folks had the opportunity to hear about soy foam, which we've talked about on this show, in fact, just this week, which is a foam to be used by firefighters. And that's based off of soybean flour, actually. So it was a really great night. Thanks to so many people for being there. Tomorrow night, I look forward to seeing more of you in Lisbon, North Dakota. I will be at the Ransom County Crop Improvement Association banquet. I'll be speaking there. So stop and shake hands and say hi. Looking forward to visiting with you. And hopefully, I have no weather troubles getting to and from Lisbon tomorrow night.
No. You'll be okay.
Okay.
Yep. You'll be fine. Yeah. In fact, we do have some precip in the forecast, but it looks like, at least in our area, it's going to be mainly on the liquid side. So that's good news there. Enjoy today. Get out and absolutely enjoy it. We're looking at sunny skies and temperatures, as I said, reaching up into the mid-50s from the 94 corridor southward. And winds starting to increase a little bit southeast, about 10 to 15. Then tonight, clouds sticking up will drop off only into the upper 30s. And tomorrow, we'll see a morning high in the mid to upper 40s, then falling temperatures in the afternoon. We'll see some light rain showers come in the afternoon, lasting through the evening hours. That will be a wintry mix north of Highway 2, where winter weather advisories are in effect. So if you're traveling north, you might run into some messy weather north of Grand Forks. And then we might mix in a snowflake or two with that before it winds down Friday evening. And then Saturday, we've got another storm system that will be coming in from the south. And that looks to just skirt far enough north to affect the FM area. It'd be less than an inch of snow, and that would be Saturday evening and a Saturday night. But areas just south of town, down towards Wahpeton, and then eastward into Lakes Country, some of those areas could pick up a couple inches of snow out of that. So all in all, just a blustery, chilly weekend coming our way. Not a lot of moisture, but again, we'll take anything we can get. It's been pretty dry. And then another chance of some wintry weather Tuesday of next week. No signs of any long stretches of spring-like weather. Also would like to give a big shout-out. I was down in Walcott this morning giving a talk to Pioneer Seeds Group. And we were talking about the LRC. And I love it because each speaking engagement I go to, the first thing I'll ask is, A, do you know Bridget Riedel? And then everybody's hand goes up. And then the second is, how many of you have heard of the LRC? And each talk I go to, we get more and more hands that are being raised. So that's great news because, and speaking of the LRC, we will have our spring and summer outlook coming up a week from today on the Jay Thomas Show. We'll break down month by month when the stormy cycles are going to pass through, when the drier periods will be. So be sure to be tuning in next week right after Weather and Ag in Focus.
And you can be sending in your questions on that day to us on the JLA Insurance phone line. That number is 701-293-9000. In advance, if you'd like to send questions to Dean or myself, you can reach us weather@flagfamily.com or ag@flagfamily.com. And always, you can follow us on YouTube and Facebook under Weather and Ag in Focus, WDAY's Weather and Ag in Focus. We're also on Acres TV for those of you who have gotten registered and subscribed to that free app. And if you haven't, give it a look. There is all sorts of agricultural information on Acres TV. Please do take the time to be a part of it. I get to be a double whammy on WDAY tomorrow. You know, normally I'm on Bonnie's show, but tomorrow morning I help co-host with Janae White on the Coffee Club, and we're going to be up at the Dome for the PRCA Rodeo.
Oh,
looking forward to it.
That'll be
so
fun.
So if you're worried about cold, drizzly weather this weekend, why not go to the rodeo? We'll give you all the highlights tomorrow morning on Janae's show.
Fantastic. Good deal. That's usually a pretty good turnout, isn't it?
I would think so. So yeah, we should have a lot of fun hanging out at the Dome. Yeah. You know, speaking of cattle, so, and especially because our guest today is Don Kinsler with NDSU Horticulture. So I thought this was really appropriate to bring up, and it's probably going to pique Don's interest. Minnesota livestock producers. So here we go. We're tying together rodeo and Don Kinsler with all of his horticultural knowledge. but Minnesota livestock producers have a challenge in pastures. This is particular for cattle, also sheep and horses, when they find poisonous plants in pasture. I'd never heard of a bracken fern, but that is possible that animals could consume it. There is a toxicity level with it. Then also cockleburr, which makes sense. Cockleburr plants would not also be difficult to eat. So I can see why perhaps we're going to try to avoid letting that happen. But the one that really stood out to me, chokecherry. Chokecherry trees and shrubs can be toxic to livestock. We used to go pick chokecherries in pastures. That's where the bushes were at. But as especially you get toward later in the summer or fall, as the wilted leaves and the berries are present, the animals can eat those. And if they consume too many, because the pits are still in the chokecherries, it releases a cyanide-like toxin that can affect the animals. They can have cyanide poisoning that can appear within minutes or hours, difficulty breathing, staggering, convulsions. It could lead to death. So I just thought that was a surprise to me. I had no idea that livestock could actually be find toxicity from chokecherries. So, Don, do you have any comments on that as the resident horticulturalist in-house today?
Well, good afternoon. And yes, immediately what that brings to mind is also apple seeds. You know, the reason we don't eat apple seeds, we don't grind up our apple seeds in our applesauce. We remove the apple seeds and also plum jelly. You know, you don't just grind up the whole thing and put it into jelly like you could with some things. For example, raspberries, you eat the seed of those. Strawberries, uh-huh. The seed is actually on the outside. You consume those. But certain fruits, apple, plum, the chokecherry you mentioned, those seeds do have cyanide in them. And so that is why we don't just grind up our apple seeds in our applesauce. And that's also, like you say, Bridget, why a livestock should not be eating like the chokecherry fruit that then has the seed in it. For example, chokecherry jelly, of course, the seeds are removed out of that. Mm-hmm. And so if you nibble on chokecherries fresh off the tree, they're a little tart, but we spit the seed out.
Uh-huh. Well,
yeah, so yes,
all right,
absolutely. Cyanide.
Wow.
Not a good item.
No.
You know what? You brought such a thing to mind for me where, yes, I always knew to take the seeds out to make chokecherry jelly, and I was way more worried about my jelly not setting up and being more of a syrup now. I got to keep this one in mind, too. This is good information, Don. Thank you.
We certainly don't want the recipients of your jelly to die of cyanide poisoning.
Right.
No, that seems bad. So what's a bracken fern? Do you have an idea what that looks like, Don? I haven't even gone to look it up on the internet yet.
It's kind of a woodsy type fern. You don't encounter them too often. Kind of a woodsy type fern. I'd have to do a little checking myself on that, but you don't encounter them too often. The other thing that you mentioned with livestock eating kind of some of these materials, another one that comes to mind is Ohio buckeye, which produces a fruit, kind of a large fruit type thing. And those also have been known to cause a livestock toxicity. For example, if an Ohio buckeye is growing in the pasture and it drops its fruit consumed by cattle. So that also comes to mind.
Oh my gosh.
Those.
So just when we thought Don was all about lawn and gardens, here we are trying to keep the cows alive.
Well,
it's
we're
a big day for us on Weather Day.
we're all in it together.
Well, and I know if I get on a stranded desert island, not to eat the seeds of an apple or a chokecherry.
Exactly.
I'd never. So Don, quick question. So it's it must be, is it inside the seed itself? Because if they contain cyanide, why wouldn't that, quote unquote, I guess, leak out into the rest of the fruit? Is it only on the, like, inside of the seed?
Well, that's a great question. Yeah, that's a wonderful question. I don't know, but it is solidly in place in the seed enough so that it does not leak out into the fruit. Okay. But that's a good question. Is it the entire? Is it the kind of the outer layer of the seed? Is it just the interior? I'm not sure on that.
Interesting.
But on the plus side, it does not leak out into the fruit itself. Otherwise, we would be in
trouble.
We would
not be here. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. Well, we're coming up on break, but when we come back, if you have any questions for Don, be sure to give us a call, 701-293-9000. I mean, lawn and garden season is right around the corner.
Yeah, right around the corner,
I'm sure some people
I've got seeds started.
Yeah, already?
Some of them.
Okay.
Not all.
All right. So if you have any questions for Don, give us a call. But don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after the break.
And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. We're glad you're here, especially because we're talking about new and old technology. And I say that because some of our old technology can simply be gardening, plants, getting ready for our spring season. But new things, well, that falls under the realm of tech support farm. And as you are getting ready for the spring season, whether you're planting a garden, but more importantly, you're getting your tractors and your computer networks all set up, you're making sure the iPads and all the software is running in your equipment, well, you can talk to Chris at Tech Support Farm to make sure that you have answered all your questions and things are running smoothly. Now, you're also spending a fair amount of time right now sending things back and forth to the bank, the insurance agent, and so much more. Chris can help you make sure that those things are secure and safe as you are transmitting all that data. So check it out. TechSupport.com or TechSupportFarm.com and talk to Chris Sherman. Now, to that technology that I think is awesome, well, it comes to gardening and so forth. And Don, when I talked to you about today, I mentioned that I'd read an article about a butternut squash that had been developed in North Dakota, and then I think it was in the 1930s, and then sent out across the U.S. I had no idea that we were into vegetable production at that point in time, particularly in things like squash. So do you have a little bit of history on that for us?
That's an amazing story. If you asked people, what is the squash that you're maybe most familiar with by name, a cultivar name, many of us would say buttercup, but the buttercup squash, you know, the classic green kind of with a little turbany button down, your buttercup. Fascinating story. In the 1930s, an NDSU vegetable researcher by the name of A.F. Jaeger, very prolific, he did a lot of breeding. The goal was to try to find a squash that was sweet enough to be like the southern sweet potatoes, which, of course, don't grow well here. Okay, so they were breeding for sweetness. And with all breeding, crossing, etc., hybridizing, a buttercup was formed, 1930s, and that remains today to be one of the leading squash types, both for gardeners, grocery stores, etc. And so fascinating, it has probably going 90-some years now, so buttercup squash, a wonderful, wonderful squash. Yeah, traces all the way to North Dakota breeding here. And again, it was to try to give us something as sweet as sweet potatoes. I love buttercup squash.
Yeah. Is that the same cultivar that was developed and sold by Prairie Road Seed from Fullerton, North Dakota? Do you have some information on that as well?
Glad you brought that up because, okay, my mom and grandparents all grew buttercup squash. That's where I grew up, love buttercup squash. About 6 years ago, I became familiar with one of North Dakota's few garden seed producers and sellers, Prairie Road Organic Seed in Fullerton, North Dakota, and they developed quite a number of vegetables specially tailored for this area. And one was this squash, a buttercup type of squash that they claimed was even sweeter. And so I thought, well, gosh, you know, if this is even better than buttercup, you know, I'm all for that. And so I grew both buttercup and this new one. It's called Uncle David's Dakota Dessert Squash. Not a short name.
Hold on. You got to say that again. Okay.
Uncle David's Dakota Dessert Squash. Uncle David's Dakota Dessert Squash. Okay. And so the first year, you know, I'm not going to abandon buttercup, you know, until I check this thing out. So I grew both side by side, harvested them both. And Mary always with the buttercup squash, she added some brown sugar to it, you know, to the squash. They mm-hmm. even make it sweeter mm-hmm. yet. But when we harvested Uncle David's to go to dessert squash, that needed no brown sugar. The sweetness was amazing. So now, kudos to Buttercup, but now I'm growing that one, Uncle David's Dakota Dessert Squash, because I feel it's even sweeter. It's much the same, looks almost identical. One note, though, is it improves greatly with the month of curing. Okay, you know, it's ready for harvest, September, October, you know, when the squash, when the frost is on the pumpkins, you know, et cetera, you harvest your squash. Okay. So after you've harvested them, let them cure, like in a mm-hmm. nice warm garage or a decent warm space, 70 degrees or so, cure for a month. That's when they develop that sweetness. And they store well all winter long. Sometime in January or February, my wife Mary will kind of cut them up, freeze it, and then we're enjoying a squash in the freezer now. People might try that. Buttercup gardeners might try that squash. And check out their, like I say, they're one of the few vegetable seed producers that I know of in North Dakota. So check them out. It's always nice to give a local company, check them out. They've got some wonderful, they've got a Dakota Bliss beet. One of the favorite watermelons is, I'm taking all this from memory, one of the favorite watermelons that I've ever grown is one called Sweet Dakota Rose. Sweet Dakota Rose. They've got a nice online catalog. And it's great. Some nice material. It's kind of nice to know when things are specially selected for this northern growing area. So that's my long story about Buttercup Squash.
I'm already on their website looking at some of these things, and they have just a fantastic looking lineup. So
they do.
Shout out, like you said.
Yeah, Dakota Tears Onion. Tears Onion. That's a great one.
Oh.
Dakota Sisters Squash, that's a great one. Not squash, Dakota Sisters Muskmelon, that's a great one.
Dakota Sport, a tomato.
Yes, a tomato, Dakota Sport. It's a nice today. Red, nice, very red tomato, well adapted for our climate.
Hmm. Well,
okay,
go ahead, Bridget.
Oh, keep going, Dean. It's okay. No, it's okay, go ahead.
I was gonna say, Don, we were talking off air about kind of how lame, depends which way you look at it, but how tame this winter was. That's back-to-back winters that haven't been that bad, at least snow-wise. Temperatures, we did go through that very cold streak of about 3 weeks. What kind of effect is this going to have now on our plants?
Okay, I'm walking around our yard and garden. I'm concerned this year. Last winter, not so bad because we didn't have much snow, but also it seemed we didn't have quite the prolonged cold that we had this winter. There were some cold spells.
Oh, yeah.
And so what I'm seeing is even on my Canadian hardy roses, I'm seeing the black canes all the way down to about 6 inches above ground level. So more dieback, more injury on things. And also with the lack of snow cover, perennials, which tend to be kind of shallow rooted, iris, you know, things like that. The freezing and thawing does more heaving up out of the soil. So this has not been my favorite winter. I loved it. I didn't have to shovel snow much, but it's more severe. I miss that insulating blanket for our plants. Yeah. So I always say I like the right amount of snow. And what's that? I don't know, 24 inches maybe? That would stay in place and protect. Mm-hmm. Snow is a pretty good insulator.
And unfortunately, we didn't have a whole lot. Yeah.
As you said, snow is a pretty good insulator, especially for just what you mentioned, roses and so forth. So when do you think, if you felt that you had freeze damage on some of those plants, like your roses, how soon would you be able to determine that, Don? When should you start ripping those plants out and start planting for new ones?
Okay, a person can see, for example, on roses, you can see the part that's winter injured, the canes, mm-hmm. which is the term for the branches of a rose, the canes. You can look starting at the tips of the canes and trace your way down. The winter injured canes are brownish black, and then as you go all the way down, the live cane is green, kind of a greenish, not mm-hmm. summer green, but noticeably green. And there will be a sharp line of demarcation right between the two. And so when I've looked at mine yesterday, The live part is 6 inches above. So there's still life there. I'll just prune them back heavily the first part of April, and they'll grow back fine. If it's black all the way down into soil, well, I let them see what kind of comes, and kind of go from there. But the time to prune some of these things is coming up now in April. After we feel, and let me know, Dean, once the worst of the winter cold is done, but before things start to leaf out, that's our pruning window for trees, shrubs. And so, yeah, we may as well get rid of the coldest weather just so it doesn't kind of zap things.
Right.
But before they start budding out, we want to do the pruning on those. And that applies to both roses and other trees and shrubs as well that we want to trim.
Okay, so let's come back to that after our bottom of the hour news, because what we're going to do for pruning, Dean, if we can get an idea of when we can start looking for the right weather forecast for that to happen. But Don, you really were helpful in answering that question. It's, we can even start looking right now to see what may have to determine what happens for our spring. So stay tuned, everyone. More discussion with Don, especially about when we get ready to start pruning, because Dean's going to tell us we're frost free through June now. Right.
Wait. No. Oh,
we have a guarantee.
Yeah. No. Not quite yet. And so we've got Al. Al, we'll get to you right after break. But we got bottom of the hour break. When we come back, we'll take Al's question and then more with Don Kinsler. If you have any questions for Don, give us a call 701-293-9000. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Our special guest today, Don Kinsler. And we've got Al, who's been patiently waiting on line one with a question for Don. Al, go ahead. What's your question?
Hey, so this harsh winter, or the bad temperatures that we had, what did it do to my rhubarb?
Hi, Al. Yeah, and thanks. Luckily, rhubarb is so winter hardy that, cross our fingers, it takes a lot to freeze out and winter kill rhubarb, same as like peonies and things like that. You know, it has happened before that even those rock solid things that have been around for forever, it can happen that they can die out, especially younger plants. But old established plants, it takes a very harsh winter for them to freeze out. You know, and so not much we can do at this point, but just keep your fingers crossed. Hopefully it'll emerge through. But this is kind of what some of the plant people call a test winter, you know, to test how winter hardy things are. You know, no snow, lack of snow, very little snow, and then pretty cold temperatures. So I'm crossing your fingers because I'm in the same situation as you, Al. We don't normally mulch, you know, protective mulch a rhubarb. And so, yeah, I'm crossing my fingers that, late April, early May, we'll see rhubarb popping up.
Cool. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Al.
Hey, well, Al has called in. I know he's listening. I want to make sure to say a big thank you. Trucker Al was kind enough to bring egg cartons to a lot of us here at the studio, and we really appreciate that, because if we're getting eggs from our friends, our neighbors, we need extra cartons. So thank you for that, Al. And then a question to Don that I have as well. When you look at rhubarb, there's usually a mixture of green and red stems. Is there a way to promote more red over green stems, or is that varietal?
It is varietal. And I'm lucky because I have a rhubarb plant that's just beautiful red stalks that I got when my mom and them sold their place after 65 years. I dug up a chunk out of their rhubarb. She had dug it up from her mother that had got it at Gurney's, I think, in the 1930s. So, yes, it is varietal. Most people prefer the red rhubarb, so that in most cases is what the garden centers and the nursery catalogs sell, are the redder varieties, such as Canada Red. Another one is Valentine. And a certain amount of sunlight, too, will help. The more sun, the redder it tends to be. If it's in a little bit of shade, maybe more green. But the variety is the main thing.
Gotcha.
And good to remember, yeah.
Yeah, Al, we had a caller. She didn't want to go on the air, but she was asking about Kindred squash. Are you familiar with that?
Kindred squash was developed at Kindred, North Dakota, by a wonderful horticulturist by the name of Ben Gilbertson. Now, when I was a young guy, Ben was probably in his 90s already at that time, but he kind of plant breeding and different things, and it was great. He developed this wonderful, I believe the skin is orange, on that one, an orange-skinned squash. and a nice flavor. And you can still find seed of that, especially in some of the heirloom type seed catalogs. Yeah, Kindred, a wonderful squash.
Okay, we have had all sorts of great ideas for what we're going to plant this year. But before we even get to that, y'all mentioned pruning earlier, and I'm sure I heard Dean promise we're frost-free from here on out, right?
No.
What's it looking like?
No. You know what? According to the LRC, and I don't have it in front of me, but I was just talking about this morning when I was out talking to the farmers about our LRC outlook for spring and summer, and I believe it was right around April 20th should be our last freeze. Now, even into early May, it appeared that we could have temperatures dip into that lower 30 range, not a hard, you know, not a freeze, but we could see some light frost into early May. But our last hard freeze should be right around April 20th.
Right. And of course, if the temperature is 30 to 32, that will kill tomato plants and pepper plants.
What if you cut, can you cover, if can we cover them up?
You can. Yeah. Okay. And, you know, if we get one frosty night like that, that's going to be 30, 32 degrees, we can cover things like that. Plastic isn't as good. You know, a cardboard box, a blanket. I save lots of old sheets and blankets. And yeah, we can cover them, especially if it's only one night and it's been nice before, nice after. Yeah, covering works. But there's also a case to be made for waiting until the soil has warmed up well, especially for peppers and tomatoes. If the soil is below about 50 to 55 degrees, those warm season crops, pepper, tomato, eggplant, cucumbers, they will just languish in chilly soil and go downhill. And sometimes they do not recover, permanently injured. And so there's a case to be made for waiting until the soil temperature has risen above 55 degrees. So it's air temperature, freedom from frost, but it's also soil temperature on the warm-loving crops.
Okay. We've got a couple of callers. We're going to go to Bob first. Tom, hang on. We'll be right with you. Bob, welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus, and Don Kinsler.
Hi, Bob.
What's your question for Don?
I've got a packet of pampas grass seed. I was wondering when to plant that.
I would start it now. I would start it now, get it going in pots or a seed tray. And that does take a while to kind of form a substantial grass plant that you'll be able to transplant out. So I would start it indoors now, good sunny window, or even better, under lights, and get it going now. I'll plant the seed maybe half an inch deep.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Bob. And we've got Tom on line two. Tom, what's your question for Don this afternoon?
Actually, just a comment or actually an encouragement to the guy that was concerned about frost and the rhubarb. We used to live on the Iron Range. In the late 90s, we had one winter where we had no snow until March. And we had sub-zero temps. I mean, the frost went down to 6-7 feet. And nothing. We didn't do anything with the rhubarb, and everything came through just fine. So I just wanted to encourage this gentleman.
Yeah, I appreciate the encouragement. Because if we lose rhubarb, peonies, and some of those things, then we are in trouble. Yeah, so thank you for that.
Yep.
Thanks.
Yep, you bet.
Thanks, Tom.
Day.
All right. Boy, a lot of questions. Well, I mean, you're famous, Don, so of course we're going to get a lot of phone calls.
I doubt that. Like I always say, we're all in this together. We're just trying to get our gardens and yards to grow a little better.
I could use help on my lawn, that's for sure.
All right, so is there anything that shouldn't be pruned this time of the year, Don, as we start to watch this warm-up? Is there something that's better to do
in the
fall?
One question that we kind of touched on was, okay, how do you know if some of these things are winter injured? Okay, roses, it's black and then green, so you know what to prune off. Okay, some of our other shrubs, it's not always so evident, or trees, so what you can do is give it the scratch test. Just with your thumbnail, scratch away at twigs, and right under the outer bark, there should be a nice green layer. That's the cambium. So even this time of year, that layer is green. If it's brownish under the outer bark, then that area has been injured. And so then, of course, that would require some pruning out. And so the time, of course, to do the pruning on most things is right before they leaf out. So April is a good month to do the pruning. But some things should be delayed. For example, anything that blooms in early summer, late spring, early summer, we're thinking lilacs, forsythia with their yellow blossoms, some types of like mock orange. If they bloom early like that, if we do the pruning now, we're cutting off those flower buds. Have you ever looked at a lilac this time of year, lilac twigs? Great big fat buds at the end. And those already have the flower in them, and they're just waiting for the weather and the roots to thaw out, and then they burst forth with those big flowers and big fat buds. And so if we do the pruning now on them during April, we're cutting off those flower buds. So if you want your lilac to bloom now, this spring, then delay the pruning until after it's done blooming. If you don't care about the blooming and just want to get it done, go ahead and prune it now, but you won't have blooms until the following spring, next, spring of 2026. So those are the only things that shouldn't be trimmed. There are some, there's another line of thought, though, about apple tree pruning. The customary time has always been, well, the apple trees are dormant, and that's still wise if you had any fire blight disease. But there's another disease that has become even more common that injures a lot of apple trees. And so a local plant pathologist, retired now, but who has studied this, he's advocating that on apple trees, wait until some growth has started on them. That means the tree has woken, is that a word?
Awoken?
Awoken.
Something like that.
the tree has warmed up and getting ready to grow. Okay. So if the tree is already starting some growth, that means the cells are dividing. And when you make those pruning cuts, the cuts will heal over quicker and you won't have the ability, the fungi, disease-causing organisms won't have the ability to penetrate into the pruning cuts. So almost everything else, prune when they're dormant. Lilacs, if you want the blossoms, wait until after they're done blooming. Apple trees, there's a good case to be made for waiting a bit until a little bit of growth starts, which means the tree is waking up and it'll heal itself over. Another thing, two other trees that should be delayed. One is maple and one is birch, because if they are pruned right before the time when the sap starts flowing, they're going to ooze out maple syrup or birch syrup. Ooh. You can even make syrup out of birch. So delay those until after the leaves have started, and then sap won't ooze out of the pruning wounds. So maple and birch delay after. Okay. That's why we can get a lot of syrup out of a maple tree. You know, if you prune now and then it starts oozing, the tree isn't going to die, but it makes kind of a mess of the trunk.
And Don, you had given me the idea to ask, because I know we just have a couple moments left here, but you said there are some secrets to getting cuttings and small plants started before you get ready to plant them outdoors this spring. Any yes. secrets you care to share?
Yeah, many of us enjoy starting some of our own plants from seed, you know, creating our own starter plants of tomatoes or peppers or petunia plants. It's a fun process. So a couple of tips. One is don't start too early. For example, tomato seeds should be started this weekend. Peppers could have been started a few days ago, but we could start them now. Marigolds, also could be started now. Okay, but the secret ingredient here is don't start the seeds. Don't plant the seeds in your final pack or pot. Instead, do like the greenhouses do. And, of course, greenhouses are serious about producing quality plants, quality packs, four-packs, six-packs, potted plants. Okay, so greenhouses start the seeds in a seed tray. I use recycled plastic, you know, that you get donut balls in. They're the little clear container. They've got a little greenhouse, kind of almost a lid on clear, you know, kind of like a little miniature greenhouse. Okay, poke some holes in the bottom. Start your seeds in that in seeding mix, okay? Get a nice seed tray going, put it on warm area, and then when they get a set of true leaves, then transplant those little individual seedlings into your cell pack or pot. Okay, the direct seeding into your final cell pack or pot does not work nearly as well. If it did, greenhouses would be all over it. My wife and I had a greenhouse for 25 years. And so you start your seeds in a tray, get them to germinate beautifully, and then transplant them by hand into little individual cell packs or pots. If you want to see, I did a program that's already had 1,300 views on YouTube. If you want to see that whole seeding and transplanting, NDSU Field to Fork 2025. There's a YouTube video that I did on how to start seeds, and that's the secret formula, the greenhouse method of producing good plants. And so, yeah, that's NDSU awesome. Field to Fork 2025, you'll see the how to start your own seeds, and that gives the whole fleshed out with pictures and the whole works.
Interesting. I got a question for you, Don, real quick. Sorry, Bridget. I've got a couple of cactus plants at home. They're small. They're in a, you know, a small bowl, you know, or it's actually planted in a dog dish. It's a memorial to my my old dog. And my question is, how often, if you have cactus plants like that, how often should you water those? Obviously, it's not as often as a regular plant.
Well, you water it when they need it. How's that?
Well, how do you know if it needs it?
That, but it's actually kind of true.
Yeah.
Now, a cactus and other succulents like to dry out. They really like to dry out because they're desert origin. And so what I like to do is just poke my finger in down to the first joint. And if I poke my finger down, if I feel moisture at that tip, don't water them, especially cacti, because there's enough moisture in those roots. I do that with all the house plants. Just stick your finger down. If it's moist, don't. But cactus, let it go dry at your fingertip and then wait a while yet. Oh, if I was to give a ballpark, you know, so much depends on the window, the size of the pot, you know, et cetera.
Right.
But if I was going to give, you know, maybe every 2 weeks, some cacti succulent, it's once a month.
I've heard once a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, check to see. Put your finger down in there. That's the best moisture meter of any. And if it's moist down there, don't water, because they got enough moisture down in.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah, fingers are wonderful tools for plants.
I heard Don earlier say that he's got not only a radio career with us, but now he's a YouTube star if he's doing this farm to fork deal for NDSU, so that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, Don. Field to Fork 2025, yeah. And again, many people have fun growing their own tomato plants, but that's a simple key. Don't plant that seed in that final pack, you know, six-pack, four-pack, but transplant. Do it the way the greenhouses do. It really works well.
Fantastic.
Excellent.
Fantastic.
And, yeah, tomatoes right about now is a good time to get started. You know, it's interesting. On Facebook, I see lots of people posting the tomatoes and things that don't look good. You know, they're spindly, straggly. Mm-hmm. Well, if they're started too early, not enough light, and then also if oftentimes I see them that they've been seeded directly into that pack. The transplanting makes a much nicer plant. And also lights, if you don't have enough, a good sunny window. And some of the modern windows are such that they don't let the full wavelength of sun in. You know, some of the newer windows are filtering out some of that light. I love lights, plant lights, LED lights, fluorescents. Plant lights can all work. Keep them very close, within inches of the seedlings. Fun pastime. I love growing. Our basement looks like a greenhouse.
Perfect, perfect. Well, Don, we want to thank you for joining us today.
Well,
as always,
I appreciate being invited.
Bridget,
you guys have a great show.
We should have him on once a week, I think.
Well, that may,
well,
that
we
may
certainly
be,
get our time. Yeah.
That may wear out my welcome rapidly.
Well, thank you again, Don, for joining us today.
Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, and don't go anywhere. We'll be back with a quick recap of weather, and we'll try and hit a couple of ag topics coming up right after the break. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And let's do a quick recap of the weather. A beautiful afternoon out there right now here in the Fargo-Moorhead area, with temperatures approaching 50 degrees right now. And we should make it up into the mid-50s, much cooler in the Northern Valley. And then light rain comes into the area as we head into tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow evening. And then we could see some light snow in the FM area and point southward Saturday evening into Saturday night. So that'll do it for Weather and Ag in Focus. Want to thank everybody for joining us. Don't go anywhere. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.